Jeremy, if you're like me, when daylight savings time happens twice a year, I have to remind myself which one is the bad one. Like, we know
spring forward,
fall back, right? But the spring forward part sounds like perky and positive, but it's really the bad one. So, like,
for my sleep, you mean?
Exactly. Like, meaning we lose an hour of by shifting the clock, you know, forward an hour. Like, what a crock, right? Like, oh, it's spring forward. It's so jumpy and fun. And really, it's like, nah, this is the sucky one that makes things
worse.
Yeah,
one
for
of the things that happens when you have children is that they both end up sucking.
That's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. Well, if you will, if you will oblige, I would like to continue our trend on topics that circle the circadian rhythm.
Oh, I love it. Are you telling me that spring forward's coming up? I haven't looked at a calendar recently.
It is on March 10th. So it's one of those, it's like, it says it's March 10th, which is a Sunday, but it's like at 2 a.m. on and that's like Saturday night. I remember when I used to be, when I was in college, and it would just mean that the bars would be open an hour later. Everybody would be really excited about that when you were 19 in Champaign, Illinois. But we've made these rounds before, particularly in episode 89 about seasonal affective disorder titled Do Shorter Days Affect My Mental Health? And also in episode 87 titled Is Late Night Eating Bad For Me? We also talked about circadian rhythms with Kristen Holmes of Whoop in episode 47, Do Fitness Trackers Make Us Healthier? So yeah, like, our circadian rhythms are so interesting and they drive so many facets of our physical and mental health. So I thought we should make it timely for springing forward on the 10th.
Are you going to teach me how to survive in 9 days?
I am teaching you how to survive. And yeah, so since we're forced to spring forward, I thought it would be helpful and timely to devote an episode on how that time shift affects us and if we can take steps to mitigate the disruption that we feel during daylight savings time.
So I'm so ready to mitigate.
Yes. Are you ready to spring into action?
Yes.
We're back, baby.
Welcome to Your Doctor Friends, the show that teaches you to sniff out the garbage and answers all the questions that you wish you could call or text your doctor friend. My name's Julie Bruni.
And I'm Jeremy Allen, and we are two physicians who work at a nationally ranked practice and take care of some of the world's greatest athletes. We know that you have questions, and we want to help.
We want to be your doctor friends.
All right, we are back. So we talked about the concept of chrononutrition in episode 87. And how planning our eating habits around our circadian rhythms can affect our metabolism. We also talked about the phase shift hypothesis as it relates to seasonal affective disorder, which can change our levels of serotonin and melatonin, our tonins, which can affect our mental and emotional state. But today, let's focus on how something seemingly so small, just moving the clock forward an hour, can have big ripple effects on our well-being. I came across a great article posted in Rush Stories via Rush University Medical Center, who are our homies.
And I know them.
I know them. Where Jeremy and I went to medical school and where we both hold associate professorships. The article is titled, Dreading the Spring Forward, You're Not Alone. And I was like, yeah. Yes, please.
I'm in that cult, whatever. If it's a small cult or a big cult, I'm in that cult.
100%.
I'd also like to quickly point out that we're both sitting at Rush University properties right now.
All right. Well, in this article that I thought was really rad, that sort of was my jumping off point, and then I kind of bounced around to some other resources about daylight savings time and how it affects us. The article featured James Wyatt, the PhD clinical sleep disorder specialist at Rush, who actually taught me during medical school. Did you get any classes from Dr. Wyatt, Jeremy?
Yeah, he definitely taught me. And sleep. I would like to say, Dr. Wyatt, if you're listening to this episode, we've tried to have Dr. Wyatt on a few times. And I have to say, I'm more just saying that, like, clearly the three of us have circadian calendars that don't line up because we can never seem to figure it out. So this is the episode that really is going to make it happen because you're going to bring his words into existence. And then it's just naturally it's going to be easier in the future, I think.
I'm just quoting him from this article that I read, but I think that that's kosher, right? the article states, and it also cites a lot of relevant, valid research, that the risk of stroke and heart attack and traffic accidents increase in the days after the switch to daylight savings time.
Oh.
I know. And I was like, oh, that sucks.
Traffic accidents make sense to me, but like strokes and heart attacks is like, really?
Legit, right. And I'll link to the article and then also sources that the article cites as well in our show notes, because there's some good data to it, and we'll delve into it a little bit. But our beloved Dr. Wyatt gave this badass quote, which I adore. Quote, "Among the sleep science community, there is no controversy. The consensus is that we should eliminate daylight saving time and stick with standard time permanently."
Hot take.
Hot take. What do you think, Jeremy?
Oh, well, please get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's well, ridiculous. So we're also in a leap year this year, right? And yes. I know that has nothing to do with daylight savings time, but I had to explain those things to my six-year-old. And she's going to listen to this episode to my wife.
Yes.
But like, hey, you know, the leap year concept of, every 4 years, because actually we go around the sun and it takes 365.24 days, not 365 days.
Understood.
The whole daylight savings time is not scientific like that. We just did it because we wanted to for crops, I think. I don't even remember.
Yes, I can get into that. Let me scoot down in my outline here about where this ridiculousness even came from. So Benjamin Franklin invented the concept in 1784.
Naturally, yeah.
He believed that rising earlier would economize candle usage and save people money. So
already the 1% is saving money.
Right, exactly, and their candle usage. At that point, pushing clocks forward to make greater use of daylight during the warmer months was formally adopted also during World War I as a part of like a global attempt to conserve energy. We can come back to this because then I have some refuting data to say like, it doesn't even do any of those things. It doesn't help save. I mean, there's some very wobbly data to talk about. Well, I'll just talk about it now. You know, the rationale is part of what keeps daylight saving times in place, but the theories are really wobbly. This is some data that I got from a Johns Hopkins article that was really helpful that I'll link in the show notes as well. But there was a meta-analysis that involved 44 studies around the world, basically looking at, like, this was done in the International, or by the International Association for Energy Economics Journal. So these are like energy economists. And basically this meta-analysis that looked at 44 different studies, aggregated all that information, said the energy savings was about 0.34% during daylight savings time. So, wow. And also, like, as society has evolved, lighting itself accounts for less overall energy consumption. So, like, really extending the use of daylight hours encourages people to use more air conditioning and heating. Is really what it comes down to. So it's not like a good net gain as far as energy consumption.
Yeah, I don't think Benjamin Franklin knew that the light-emitting diode was coming. Like, he didn't know LED lights were coming that take up no energy and last forever. So
exactly.
Yeah. I bet he would have loved Bath & Body Works candles, though.
Exactly. So let me get back on track here, but I wanted to give you a little primer as to where daylight savings time came from, so you can thank Ben Franklin. All right. But then going back to like the thesis statement of part of the article, the Rush article was saying that right after daylight savings time that there's an increased risk of heart attack, stroke, and traffic accidents. It reminds me a bit of the changes in the early mid-2000s capping the number of duty hours, and here's duty again, that medical residents could work in one shift, so 30, and in a week, 80 hours, because there was a bunch of increased incidents of medical errors and traffic accidents when residents were working longer time periods. Do you remember this? This was kind of like in the time frame that I was starting medical school, where it was like...
I remember, yep.
And then everybody got mad at us for being like, your generation is spoiled. It was like, don't forget, Gen Z, we were called spoiled all the time too. And it was basically just because we realized that we were hurting people and dying ourselves because we were working more than 80 hours a week. Coming back to my point here. Yeah, so surveys from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, which I'm going to reference a lot because that's the main where a lot of this data comes from. So major surveys have shown that 63% of Americans would prefer to eliminate daylight savings time. And more than half, 55% of Americans experience tiredness. So from somewhat to extremely tired after daylight savings time. That was a pretty recent
survey. So what you're telling me is that there's something that's really popular with the general population, but has a precedent in the distant past, and we can't seem to get rid of it. I've never heard of a story like that.
Yes, archaic things dictating how we live our lives. Now, yes, this daylight savings is one of them. According to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, The change from standard to daylight savings time is associated with an increased risk in the following areas. So I'm going to name all of the things that they have, that the American Academy of Sleep Medicine says increases risk during daylight savings. It's a lot of things. Do you want to hear them all?
Yes.
Heart attack, stroke, hospital admissions and ER visits, missed medical appointments, sleep disruption, mood disturbances, suicide, traffic accidents, work absences, stock market volatility, and poor athletic performance. I know you heard that last one. That's very important to us in sports medicine,
right? I did.
And
the whole time I was thinking, I'm glad we're saving all that those candles by increasing all those things. Just for quick clarification,
yes,
those increase over what period of time? Like, obviously that doesn't follow
the
for the
time,
next, like,
yeah,
100 days. It's
no,
probably
for,
like
the 48 hours after it happens.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeremy, I'm going to steal from your Corona Nutrition outline and give a primer again on our circadian rhythms, if you don't mind. So now I'm just stealing your work.
Well, you're citing your source, so that's good.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for allowing that. Yeah, so circadian rhythms, again, are the physical, mental, and behavioral changes related to the day-night cycle. So, like, exposure to light and dark have the biggest influence on our circadian rhythms. So we often reference them a lot with, like, sleep and time zone changes or shift work. But things like food intake, stress, physical activity, social environment, and temperature can also affect these rhythms. And the circadian rhythms influence very important functions in the human body, like sleep patterns, hormone release, appetite and digestion, and temperature. I'd like to quote Dr. Wyatt again, because he's going to add in a bit about the circadian rhythms. He says, "We have clocks throughout the body. A special region in the hypothalamus regulates our circadian rhythms and acts as the master pacemaker, telling us, here's daytime, so do this. Now it's nighttime, do that. Our organ systems have to change their function depending on what time of day it is." So, as an aside, this is me quoting me now. Jeremy, that special region in the hypothalamus that he referred to is the... Do you remember?
I wasn't listening. Is it the hippocampus?
No. The pineal gland, remember?
Yeah, because the hippocampus isn't in the hypothalamus.
No,
I just said the first thing that came to mind.
To mind? It's in your brain.
Yeah.
Where melatonin is secreted. Jeremy, do you know why it's called the pineal gland?
Oh, no.
Because pineal refers to its tiny pine cone shape.
Oh, that makes sense.
Isn't that cute? There's a little tiny pine cone in your head that secretes melatonin that tells you if it's day or night.
I like when things make sense like that versus like when things are named after people randomly, like my...
Like Sinding Larsen Johansson syndrome?
Yeah, I was going to say my kryptonite, the Baker cyst. Like,
the Baker cyst.
If I could ever have a word with Baker, I'd punch him in the face.
I think Baker was not a person. I think bakers were meaning like people that baked things.
Oh, another hot take. I knew that.
Knelt a lot and would notice that they'd have the like pain and swelling in the back of their knees. I don't think it was Baker like Tammy Faye Baker's cyst. I think it was Baker's like folks that like the Great British Bake Off. This is very relevant to my interests.
For a long time, I've had misplaced anger at some unknown baker, but it's actually just been like tennis elbow. It's Baker's cyst.
Mm-hmm. I think it should
I'm
be
have to,
towards Jim
I'm
Baker.
I'm going to look this up.
Jim Baker sucked. Just, you know, spelled differently though.
What a tangent right. I just put us on.
What are you? We're like role reversal here. I'm enjoying this. I'm going to go back to Dr. Wyatt's quote now. So he says, "Our gut digests more at night and less during the day. Urine production reduces in the evening so that we can sleep through the night more easily. Our temperature is higher during the day than at night. And this is all regulated by our circadian rhythm." Well, that was a really nice, concise way. Like, what a great sleep specialist that should come on our show.
Yeah, well, and educated us. I just mm-hmm. The thing I remember Dr. Wyatt saying, and I'm going to paraphrase. This is not the literal words he used.
Sure.
But when he taught us, he said, "You know, I don't drink my coffee when you dum-dums drink it. I drink it at like 1 or 2 in the afternoon when there's actually buildup and it actually does something."
God bless someone that calls you a dum-dum when you're yep. paying $50,000 a year to sit in a seat.
I would like to emphasize that I said I paraphrased him. I do not believe he used the word dum-dum.
Did he not?
It really did. I don't think so. But it emphasizes really how the tone and what he was trying to tell us as we were all sitting drinking our coffee in the morning.
I hope that he called us dum-dums. We are dum-dums. That's great.
Yeah. But it's well said by him, that quote that you said. I mean, I think the concept you listed like 12 or 13 things that this can do.
Yes.
And you said to yourself, I'm like, how is that possible? But our body is a machine mm-hmm. that kind of has a auto shut off, auto turn on mm-hmm. mechanism, right? Like it's going on automatically based on the circadian rhythm.
Right.
And when you change the time, it doesn't know how to do that.
Right.
It messes everything up. And so I think what seems benign and usually just feels like, man, that would spring forward is like, man, I'm just going to lose an hour of sleep and I'm going to be really
right.
tired.
Yep.
Actually changes the whole way your body's working, at least for like 24 to 48 hours, which is kind of scary.
And this is something that was put together in, what, like 1734 or whatever it was yeah.
by
Ben Franklin. Like,
yeah.
Can we not? And when there's a consensus statement from an entire academic organization of sleep specialists being like, it is, there is no question this should be gotten rid of. And then it's just like, no, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it also just feels like in a world in which we can't bipartisanly pass anything, can we just get behind getting rid of daylight savings time?
I know. Who is it helping now exactly?
Let's just create some momentum here.
It's helping Big Candle.
Big Candle.
So Dr. Wyatt and the consensus among sleep medicine specialists is that these effects are related to the time changes tampering with our natural circadian rhythms. So our bodies have a stress response when we're forced into time shifts, like what we discussed before about jet lag, and like similar responses happen when people change their hours and shift work. So I wanted to get back to other proponents say that additional, so these are people that are saying like, oh, you should continue daylight saving time. This is a good thing. That the additional daylight in the evening hours during spring and summer are beneficial to the mental health of those who work during the day. But that concept also has been refuted. There was a 2020 study published in PLOS that I'll link to as well that suggests that the change exacerbates mood disorders, depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. Because sunlight is the most powerful synchronizer of our circadian rhythms. So, like, while it's advantageous to have more time for, like, outdoor activities in the evening, this is according to Adam Spira, who's a PhD sleep specialist from Johns Hopkins. He said, quote, exposure to more light closer to bedtime makes it harder to fall asleep at our usual bedtime and then can reduce the amount of sleep that we're able to get each night. So they're saying, like, this data from the study in 2020 suggests that the change actually makes mood disorders worse. And also, other sleep specialists are saying, like, yeah, if you're blasting yourself with light closer to the time to go to bed, like, it doesn't even make anything better. You don't sleep well after that. So, interesting take.
To me, it seems like a consistent circadian rhythm is important, which is why I feel like through our sleep, conversations, we say go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time, or maybe waking up at the same time is the most important, and having mm-hmm. all that consistency. And so whether extra sunlight is good for our mental health or not, it seems like inconsistency in our circadian rhythms is bad for us.
Right.
So I just feel like not having any inconsistency would make the most sense to me.
Agreed.
Also, I'm glad my mental health is better while I'm having, strokes, heart attacks, decreased athletic performance. I'm trying to think of all the other ones that were in there.
Yeah, but it's not even better. It's the opposite is actually true when they look at it more and more. But it was like people before we had this data were saying, like, well, it's better because you get more daylight in the evening, but you get less daylight in the morning. That's the other part mm-hmm. of it, too. Like, you listen to people like Dr. Huberman, saying, like, within your first hour of waking, you should be getting sunlight exposure if you can. Like, this is what helps us to set and support our circadian rhythm. So, like, okay, like, have less of it when you need it and have more of it when you're, like, it's going to make your sleep crappier. So,
perfect.
That's, great. So while the Academy and more than a dozen other organizations have adopted the position that public health and safety would benefit from the elimination of daylight savings time, there's really no way to know if and when this is ever going to come about, other than just us complaining about it loudly.
Who has control over this? Is this Congress? Does Congress have to pass this? Or does,
I don't know, because it's not just a U.S. thing, correct? Isn't it like the world?
No, it's not the world. Yes.
Let's Google this. Let's do some real-time action.
I think we should. Who has this button? Who has the nuclear button on getting rid of daylight savings time? Whose desk is that on?
The U.S. Department of Transportation.
Buttigieg?
Oh, no. Mayor Pete did this? No.
Well, he didn't do it. He just hasn't not done it.
Mayor Pete.
So that's who the YDF community has to write letters to, is Mayor Pete? He's the one that has a control over this?
Here we go. Who enforces daylight saving time? This is a little article I'm just looking at right now from April. Vern Buchanan, Republican Florida, reintroduced the Sunshine Protection Act, which would make daylight savings time permanent nationwide.
Well, we never trust a man named Vern.
It was somebody from Florida. The Sunlight Protection Act. I love naming things the way that they're supposed to be named. Like, it, of course, I'm going to say no. Screw the sun. I hate its guts. Get rid of it.
So when it says daylight savings time permanent, does that mean, like, we don't spring forward? So that still would be a consistent time? Or, like, keep the two that we have?
I think it's, like, keep it forever.
I don't want to know what Vern wants. Like, I still want to know, am I writing to Mayor Pete to...
I don't know. This is really funny. I hope you cut all of it. You never do,
I'm not
do,
cutting
though.
Any of this.
You never do.
I think people want to know.
I'm just on Wikipedia now, which is insane. I probably should have put this in my outline to begin with, but I love showing our cards of, like, well, a question comes up and I don't know the answer to it, so just give
we
it
give
a
the
goog.
People what they want.
Yeah, give it a goog. All right, this is an entire article about daylight savings time. It looks like Arizona is the only state that observes permanent standard time. Everybody else. Oh no, sorry, that's in Hawaii. And some of the, like, protectorates. So, like, I don't know. I'm looking at a map right now. This is very stupid. Okay, I'm going back to the actual
thing. So the United States? That's a good start if it's a map of the United States.
It is. Shut up. I'm going back to where I went. Okay.
Well, here's an article from Reuters from March of 2022 that says U.S. Senate approves bill to make daylight savings time permanent. Hmm. So it would said ending the twice annual changing of clocks in a move promoted by supporters advocating brighter afternoons and more economic activity.
So
that's the Sunshine Protection Act.
My understanding was that means we don't shift anymore. We just stay on daylight time forever. I don't understand.
And a quote from Marco Rubio. I know this is not the most important issue confronting America, but it's one of those issues where there's a lot of agreement. If we can get this passed, we don't have to do this stupidity anymore.
Did it get passed? It did not, because we're having daylight savings time on the 10th.
No, so it passed the Senate. It still needs to pass the House, I think.
And this was how long ago?
Agreed the change would not take place until November 2023 after input from airlines and broadcasters.
Well,
interesting.
It is now March of 2024.
A few things have happened since that time, I think.
I know, but I mean, I guess in this instance, I agree with Marco Rubio.
Year-round daylight savings time was used during World War II and adopted again in 1973 in a bid to reduce energy use because of an oil embargo and a repealed a year later.
Yeah, I heard.
So our government controls time. I get it. Okay. It looks like it has to go through Congress is basically the long answer to that question.
Oh, so then it'll never change whatsoever.
Mm, yeah, well, like I said, let's start low and get some momentum, huh?
I would like to talk about, and this is actually relatively brief, the honeypot that we're finally giving at the end, which is, what do we do about it? How do we make it any better
Please.
For ourselves? And it's kind of simple. And this is
besides Mayor Pete and
writing Mayor
and
Pete
and your senator,
your congressman,
and,
congressman.
Exactly.
So how can we mitigate the effects of daylight savings time? Dr. Wyatt recommends that you shift your bedtime for just the two nights leading up to daylight savings time. Like, it's not something you have to plan weeks in advance, because no one's going to do that. You didn't even know when it was. You just asked me. You had no idea what day it was.
I always find out about it the Friday before, because I look at my weekend calendar.
That's
like,
all you need to know.
Son of a bitch.
You only need to know the Friday before. This is exactly what he's saying. He said, the shift happens at 2 a.m. this year on Sunday, March 10th. So he recommends going to bed 30 minutes earlier on Friday, the 8th, and again on Saturday the 9th. And then by the time it happens, you won't drive your car into the lake.
Wow. Well, that's good. So, and can then I presume when we do fall back, it's the other way? Like, I should go to bed 30 minutes later each time?
I'm so glad you said that. Fortunately, the fall time change doesn't seem to be related to the same adverse outcomes, so no need to change your sleep patterns in anticipation of falling back. Just enjoy your extra hours of sleep.
Wow.
I know. It's just this one that sucks.
So we bitch and moaned about this thing for like 20 plus minutes, and then at the end the solution was just go to bed 30 minutes earlier two nights beforehand, and the other one you don't even have to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for staying with us, friends.
In fairness, I don't think Dr. Wyatt was saying do those two things and you won't have a heart attack or a stroke.
No. But I think to like mitigate feeling sleepy and crappy, yes.
Right. So... we still should get rid of this stuff.
Agreed.
Sign a petition. Well, that was educational. Thanks. We also got to do some mid-episode Googling, which is always fun.
Right, which I hope people stay with us and don't think that we're just ridiculous. But I also love the concept of just showing your work of like, well, I don't know the answer to that, so let's just look it up and see what we find. And, you know, might be fun to do that in real time on like a reel or a video to be like, well, don't click on that one because that's ridiculous and that's an ad and that's, you know, like how to Google things would be a nice one to do too.
Well, I hope everybody survives their spring forward. And listen, we are getting closer to spring, which is good for everybody's mental health.
Heck yeah.
Thanks for teaching us, Julie.
You're welcome. All right, sleep tight, folks, except I have a quick dessert, so we'll be right back. So my dessert topic for this week, perhaps we should call it banana pudding. That's because I heard about this health headline a few weeks ago from none other than the silliest little podcast that ever was, Bananas. With Banana Boy Scotty Landis and Kurt Braunohler. I love them.
I've heard of that podcast, but I've never listened to it.
Oh, it's so fun. They just tell really great, really funny, silly stories in the news, which is kind of what we do, but ours are more just like giving people health advice and stuff. We love them. They're great. They're on the Exactly Right Network. My benevolent overlords, Georgia Hardstark and Karen Kilgariff from My Favorite Murder. But they're great. I love them. They're funny comedians and writers, and they're great. So Kurt and Scotty were talking about the vibes pill. Jeremy, what do you think, just by name alone, that could be?
Honestly, the first thing that went to my head was like, that's something that would be sold on 4hymns.com. That was the first thing that went through my head. With time to process, the second thing that went through my head was like, well, I was thinking like ecstasy. I was like,
well,
drugs.
Well, you're wrong. It's a pill that you ingest before eating that vibrates in your stomach to give the illusion of fullness.
It's like by Therabody?
I'm sure it will be at some point, but I don't know why I'm smiling so hard. This is so funny to me. Vibes actually stands for something. It's all caps, vibes. Vibrating ingestible bioelectronic stimulator. And it was created by a team of physicians and engineers and researchers with, from what I could see, affiliations at MIT and Brigham and Women's Hospital, Harvard Medical School. So, like, legitimate, you know, like,
I mean,
learned folk.
I can see it working, but I'm thinking to myself, does it stop vibrating? It'd be a really weird shit.
Let me explain.
If you're pooping and vomiting.
Let me explain. It's great. So... the full article outlining the research was published in Science Advances this past December. Here's the hot points about this device. One, you take the pill 20 to 30 minutes before eating. Two, it has a gelatinous biomembrane that gets dissolved in your stomach acid about 4 minutes after you ingest it, which then, once it like eats away at this biomembrane, that starts the vibes pill vibration. The vibration, which is literally caused by like a tiny motor and a piston inside the 1 cm by 3 cm pill. First of all, like, that's not a small pill.
No,
show
it's
me
a horse pill.
Show me 3 cm right now. Right? Like, you've checked cervixes before. You know what 3 cm is.
Damn it.
Anybody who's delivered a baby...
It has to be big enough to fit a piston, apparently. So
exactly. So, okay. So the vibration is felt by the gastric lining, so the mucosa of the stomach, which stimulates gut mechanoreceptors. So those are nerves that tell the gut that something's there. Those receptors activate the vagus nerve, which we've talked about before, not Las Vegas, but V-A-G-U-S, which then sends signals to your hypothalamus, like we talked about before, in your brain. And then this induces a serotonin response. So your brain, your hypothalamus releases serotonin and then signals a sort of hormonal metabolic response that imitates a fed state. The pill vibrates for about 38 minutes on average. The vibes pill was studied in pigs. The study is actually extremely detailed. It used endoscopy, so they put a camera down these pigs to confirm the placement and studied the stomach lining response, as well as measuring satiety or, like, fullness hormone changes, and then finally the eating habits and the weight changes of the pigs themselves. So the pigs exhibit. See if we want to hear like what happened with these pigs that ate these pills.
Well, I'm sure they ate less because they had an endoscopy done while they had the vibes pill in there. It's got a camera down their throat. They ate less.
Yes, the pigs exhibited 40% decrease in food ingestion. So they ate 40% less food. And they minimized their weight gain rate compared to control. So like these were pigs that were like supposed to be gaining weight and they gained less weight. They said that the cost of manufacturing the pill was quoted in the study to be cents to dollars. Like, how can you make a tiny little machine so cheap? But it's also like, well, you can. And they also noted that they're not sure if and when human testing will be performed. But, like, these are the things that we're coming up with.
Because we can't stop eating?
Or not even, I don't know, like, not really. Just, like, because there's a sense of a need for weight management. So the idea is let's offer people a little motorized pill that vibrates in your stomach so that you feel full. I mean, again, I think it's interesting science fiction that happens to be fact. I don't know if this will ever come to complete fruition.
Did they mention whether you can feel the vibration? Like, do I feel my stomach vibrate?
I don't know. Well, they haven't done it on human beings. I mean, I bet you one of these researchers might have to. Yeah. What does a pig say?
I know what a fox says.
That's cute. A pig says I'm full, apparently. Anyway,
yeah,
I just thought this is a very interesting story.
It's a cute story, but you're right. It does like kind of feel is like, what cute? Are we doing? What are we doing here? I mean, it's cute because we laughed and it's funny, and I hope that people listening kind of laughed with us because it is kind of funny.
It's
but
dessert.
also like it's real and like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing? I know. Like, can't we just let people eat things and be the size they are?
Well, can't we just go back to enjoying food?
I know. No, you have to eat your vibes pill first.
I mean, having food and being together is the thing that makes us live the longest.
I know.
So, I agree with you. Having your vibrating pill, then having your food with everybody as you all stare at your food.
Right.
Because you're not hungry.
And you do poop it out. It comes out the other end eventually.
Well, thank you for the dessert, the vibrating, non-human tested dessert of a piston.
I'll keep you posted if I see more information about this doing human trials or if it ever gets released. I don't know. Who knows? In like a year from now, we might be like sponsored by Vibes Pill.
Yeah, we'll be taking it on the show to tell people what's happening.
Katie Couric style. Ay, Dios mío. All right, friends. That's really the end. I'm not adding any more ridiculous stories. But I do love our banana boys. And
yeah. Always good vibes here at the show. Listen to your doctor friends.
The amazing music is credited to SkillCell with Pixabay licensure. The podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast should not be taken as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Please consult a medical professional for any medical issues that you may be having. The contents of this podcast are the opinions of the hosts only and do not reflect the opinions of their employers or affiliations. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Under no circumstances shall Dr. Julie Bruni or Dr. Jeremy Allen or any guest to the podcast be responsible for damages arising from use of the podcast.